Today, I'm speaking with a repeat guest, Will Churnland, an Amazon sales expert. Will owns a company called Goat Consulting. They help brands and manufacturers sell better on Amazon. Amazon's got a lot of different sales programs, and it is actually a very complicated process to go through and figure everything out and navigate the way around. So companies like Goat Consulting work with sellers to help them navigate the waters better. So how are you doing, Will?
Yeah, I'm doing pretty good. And no, you did a perfect job of kind of explaining what we do. We have companies contact us from publicly traded companies to startups, and they usually have a lot of kind of different business models, different number of products, different types of products. And so one of the first things we usually work on with them is what business model within Amazon makes the most sense for you, because like you were just alluding to, they are vastly different.
So what I like to do is to look at the different ways that people can sell. What is Seller Central and how does it actually work?
So anyone can sign up for Seller Central at any moment. You to get a pro Seller Central account and use Fulfillment by Amazon, Amazon advertising, is just $40 a month. So it's pretty low overhead to get started on Seller Central. And on Seller Central, you can sell basically any product you want. All you need to do is say, especially if the product's already being sold on Amazon, is click a button that says, I want to sell this item to, say what price you want to sell it for and how many of the item you have, and you're basically already set up. From there, you can decide to ship the product yourself once the customer purchases it, or you can choose to actually send it into Amazon's fulfillment center and have Amazon send it to each individual customer as they purchase the product. And that kind of comes down to maybe the size of the product. If you're selling something like a hot tub, it might not make sense to ship it into Amazon's warehouse and then ship it to the end customer. It might make more sense to ship it to the customer directly and stuff like that. So when you're selling on Seller Central, just realize that you are just using Amazon as a marketplace, and you're sending your inventory in, and they only ship it out once the customer actually buys the product. And so you're kind of on the hook for all the inventory you send in, doing inventory management, and there's a lot of control that you have over your brand.
What are the fees when you sell on Seller Central?
In general, I usually say there is around 20 to 30% fees of the retail price. Now, with the, that's kind of just a general rule of thumb. It gets kind of more complicated once you get into specific categories and the different sizes of the products. And so usually Amazon takes a certain percentage, around 15% right off the bat, just for the privilege of using Amazon's traffic to get the sale. And then the rest of the fees are storage fees and fulfillment fees and picking and packing fees that are actually fairly reasonable.
And that doesn't include any advertising, because you can also do advertising, right?
Exactly. That does not include a single cent of advertising. And so the advertising is very similar to the Google AdSense advertising, where you get to display above everyone else in the search results, and then you pay per click. And so if you're a product that's a few $100 and a click is only a dollar, then if you have enough confidence in your product that for every 15 clicks someone's going to purchase your product, you're going to have a very profitable product there. And the kind of main difference between the Google ads and the Amazon ads is that when people go to Amazon, they have their wallet open, they have their credit card saved, their address saved, they have the one-click check out button. And so driving traffic from Amazon converts in general a lot better than having Google traffic, who actually has to kind of start from scratch, and it might not be technically in the buying mood, it might be just more in the researching mood.
What are some of the top hacks or tricks to be successful in Seller Central?
It's going to sound boring, but it's honestly sell a good product at a good price. We work with a lot of different companies, and that tends to be deciding factor, is that we have a product that people actually like, that it has good reviews, people trust the brand, and just basically getting that in front of more customers. It's we're working with lots of high quality brands, and like I usually say, like they're kind of like the Lamborghini of their specific niche. If they sell snorkels for underwater scuba diving, they're the best snorkels out there. And so it makes it easy for us, because we're usually competing against a bunch of people private labeling kind of generic widgets from China. And so as long as we can price be somewhat in the same ballpark as the price, but just have much better branding, have much better photos, have much better kind of brand experience, usually we can beat them head to head, no problem.
What's the number one differentiating factor for people selecting one product over the other one on Amazon?
It's price. It's this thing that we have issues with our clients all the time where they say, can we increase the amount of units sold if we sold this t-shirt for $20 instead of $25? And we have to come back to them every time and explain to them that anytime we reduce the price, the amount of unit sales will go up, but your margin will go down. Part of the reason why we are having success in Amazon in the first place is because you sell your products at a higher price, and we can, because this brand was built up over the X amount of decades. And so we need to take full advantage of that, because all these other people who are selling for the t-shirt for $10, they don't have a brand to protect. And so they can just sell for bottom barrel prices and just try to make a buck off each t-shirt. And so it's, we know that if you decrease the retail price, that sales will go up, unit sales will go up every single time. And so it's kind of getting people to kind of dig their heels in and go, no, we're going to command this higher price. We're going to spend the money on advertising opposed to just reducing our retail price. And that way we're going to keep our brand's image high with the high retail price while getting a maximum exposure.
So basically, still people go to Amazon number one for finding price, the best prices.
It's not that they go to Amazon for the best prices. They go to Amazon because they trust the shipping. They trust it's going to be there in 2 days. It's an easy process. But when it comes down to it and you're selling cement drink coasters and there's 20 on the first page and one guy selling it for $9 and everyone else selling it for $20, that person selling it for $9 is just going to be doing much more in sales regardless of who actually has like a better brand or better photos or anything like that. Usually people just go, okay, well, they all look the same to me. This one's half the price. I'll give it a shot. It's if you go, there's some like YouTube videos you can find of people kind of going, why is this the best-selling computer monitor on Amazon? And they'll deep dive into it and look into it. And when it really comes down to everything, it's that they just had the best price to quality ratio where the quality wasn't that bad and the price was super cheap. So people just tend to buy it over and over again. Same with Bluetooth speakers, Bluetooth headphones. The best Bluetooth selling speakers are not Beats by Dre or Bose Bluetooth headphones. They're going to be some random Chinese brand you'd never heard of that's selling a Bluetooth speaker for $10, and people say, hey, it works, it hasn't broken on me, $10 seems like a fair price. And that tends to be the majority of the consumers.
And then reviews, where does that come into play?
Reviews are helpful. People are slowly but surely going for quality over quantity. There was a time there a few years ago where if everyone had 100 reviews and you had 2,000 reviews, you were that much better off than everyone else. But now, as people become more apprehensive of how legitimate the reviews are, they're more likely to actually read the reviews and go into them and go, okay, well, this person said they've had it for 6 months. They posted 4 different photos of them using it and installing this product. This seems like a very legitimate review. I trust this one more than the person with 2,000 reviews that just all the reviews say great product, would buy again.
Okay. And yeah, I remember you previously mentioned in another conversation that June or July, Amazon went through and actually cleaned up a lot of the reviews and took out fake reviews.
Yep. Yeah, I was actually traveling through Romania and Ukraine, going to different Amazon conferences, talking to different Amazon sellers. And yeah, everyone was saying that they just overnight had been lost thousands of reviews. And then we had leads coming into our consulting company saying, hey, my products were legit. I had 10,000 reviews. Now I woke up today and I have 2 reviews. What can I do to get those 10,000 reviews back? And it's unfortunate, but there's no real right way to help these people, because Amazon took the reviews down for a reason. They think that they were suspicious or from similar IP addresses or something, where they took all the reviews down and there's nothing you can really do about it. I think eventually in the future, I'd hope that Amazon just goes to a average review and does not show actually the amount of reviews, because eventually they want to keep their marketplace competitive because that's best for the customer. And if it gets to a point someday where every single iPhone charger has 50,000 reviews, you're never going to get on that first page ever again. And that's not good for the marketplace in general. But if they had it so they averaged them out and they said, okay, this one has 3.5 out of 5-star reviews, and it doesn't matter the number of reviews they have, that would make it a much more even playing field for everyone and allow the marketplace to be more competitive. So I'd assume at some point they're going to have to kind of go towards that model, since it's not sustainable to have a product with 200,000 reviews and then everyone else at 10 reviews, because it just makes the marketplace kind of look goofy.
That's an interesting point. I mean, there are definitely nuances to even how to do that, because is it fair that if somebody has 10 reviews and they're all good, they would be like perfect, as opposed to somebody having 10,000 reviews and they've got a 95% rating?
You make a good point there, and that's where it's going to have to be kind of an educated consumer.
Yeah.
Where you go, okay, do I trust the oil filter for my car that it does break down sometimes, but out of 10,000 people, it only breaks down on 5 of them? Or yeah, do I trust the oil filter for my car that 10 people have used it? They all said it was great, but who knows, when the next shipment comes in, all 10 of those people might say it stinks, and then I'm back to 50-50 rating. So no, I think that's going to be something that's going to be interesting for the consumer. One thing they could also do on Amazon's side is just make it so the reviews have to be that much more lengthy. If you had to include a photo, if you had to include a copy of your receipt or something like that, any little hurdle or barrier to entry would prevent people from leaving kind of spammy or crappy reviews and make the review quality that much better. An interesting thing they've added to some of the pages that you can see on Amazon when you're shopping around is a section that's not really under the reviews, but it's right above it, where it says have a video of your own to add. And then when you click on it, it asks you if you have an unboxing video, an installation video, a review video, what kind of video you have, and they're allowing just customers to have those videos uploaded. I think they see the success of some of these kids making $10 million a year reviewing toys on YouTube and such, thinking, okay, why don't I have this internally on Amazon? It's obviously providing a lot of value and entertainment to the customer, and it's probably driving to sales, where the YouTube description probably has an Amazon link in it, sending traffic to Amazon. Why aren't we doing this in-house? And so giving the customers more way to add content to each individual listing and kind of authentic content is going to be a big bonus. And I don't know how they're going to incentivize more people to do it, but I think that's going to be a big help in the future of helping buyers in the future really get down to the nitty-gritty of, okay, here's videos of 5 people installing it, here's 4 people unboxing it, here's the 1,000 reviews it has. I feel very confident in my purchase decision after getting all this information on one page.
If you go to a typical e-commerce website, the good ones, really, they try to give as much content about a product on the product page. You know, the other challenge that I see myself is that I go to an Amazon page and it's just overwhelming with information. There's just so much on there. And I mean, I don't want to like read a book and take a class on this thing. I just want to buy this product. So you also have to look at the amount of all this information, and then how are you going to display everything to people so that they just don't get overwhelmed?
Yeah, it's an interesting thing we talk about with our clients sometimes, where are we optimizing for like the human experience or for the algorithm? Because the example you give, that's just people optimizing mostly for the algorithm, where they're trying to get as many words on their listing as possible so they can get indexed for these words for when people search them to try to drive sales. Mm-hmm. Now, the thing is that they're getting their product in front of a lot of customers, but then they're getting to the point where you just described, where they see all these words, they get overwhelmed, and they click out. And so how can you do it in kind of an organic way where you can get indexed for all these keywords, but in a way that it actually reads properly and it's actually formatted properly, where it doesn't scare customers away once they've clicked on your listing? And so that's kind of a balance that we're always kind of fighting on our side, where it's like, okay, we want to include all of the, say, Spanish keywords that people are searching in the back end of the Amazon listing, where we're going to get indexed for these keywords, but at the same time, they won't be displayed anywhere, confusing people. And that's the kind of stuff that we think about on a daily basis. One of our companies sells different types of like cleaning products, mm-hmm. and they tend to be a ton of Spanish keywords to try to find our products. We know that like we don't really want to write the whole entire listing in Spanish, but at the same time, when you see these polls around the U.S. where it's like 20% of people speak Spanish natively, that's a big section of the country that speaks a specific language. We should make sure that we're being displayed for it.
Now let's talk about the other sales program on Amazon, which is Vendor Central. What is Vendor Central, and how does that work?
So Vendor Central is an invite-only program where Amazon buys the products directly from you. And so on a weekly basis, they will place a purchase order with you saying, hey, I need 50 of these, 20 of these, 15 of these. And you get about 48 hours usually to confirm the order and ship it out to Amazon and set it on their way. And so this makes sense for a variety of different customers. Say for my brother, for example. He does tens of millions of dollars in sales through Vendor Central because he has like 200,000 different products that he sells. Now, if he wanted to actually have one in stock of every product that he has available, he would tie up $100 million in cash and it would never make any sense. But since he only buys the products from his distributors once Amazon's bought it from him, he's able to offer a lot more products to Amazon without having to tie up his own capital to keep them in stock since it's Amazon's cash.
What is the requirement for being invited?
So usually they want to only work with brands and manufacturers, and they want you to be on pace to do a minimum of $10 million a year in sales. And so if you're a larger brand, they for sure, and if you're a brand listening to this right now, you may have gotten the call. We've talked to a lot of brands who've gotten the call from Vendor Central three different times over the last 3 years saying, hey, you've been invited. We'd like to have you on there. And since people are apprehensive of Amazon and think of them as this big bad monster sometimes, they usually kind of just hang up as soon as they hear it's Amazon on the phone. There's other times where they'll contact us and say, hey, do you mind getting on the phone with us with Amazon? Because we're not really sure what they're offering to us or what any of this stuff that they're saying means. Can you translate it into normal English back to us so we can have a conversation and make an accurate decision on if we should go on Vendor Central or not? And so, as I kind of described earlier, it really depends on your business model and what kind of products you're selling. For some brands, it might make sense to only do Seller Central. Someone like Apple, where it's like, why not stock the products yourself, get the full margin, have full control of your brand. You obviously have plenty of cash to stock all these products. So it's not like you're tying up cash, having a bunch of iPhones in stock. Like it may, and you only have, Apple may only have 30, 40 SKUs total. So it's like, it makes all the sense in the world for them to just stock the products themselves. Where if you're a product company like Digitech, if you have any idea who they are, they sell, they're a multi-billion dollar company that sells 100,000 different electronic components, where they don't want to stock and keep all these things at Amazon and be monitoring their inventory at all times and basically have a second warehouse just at Amazon and doing that type of thing. They'd rather have Amazon do all the heavy lifting for them using their own data and making sure that they only purchase what they need when they need it, opposed to Digitech having to forecast inventory numbers on incomplete data.
Do companies actually have to pay to get on Vendor Central?
So you still pay fees, but they're negotiable and they're kind of custom to each company. And so like a one fee that they have sometimes is one where it's like a 3% like return fee. So they get 3% off on your wholesale prices. But with that 3%, they're saying, we will never send you a return. If a return ever happens, we'll deal with it. We'll eat the costs. We'll have this 3% cover it. And so if you're selling something like, say hot tubs, I'll use that example again.
Right.
That 3% might be a godsend. You go, oh yeah, I'll pay the 3%, no problem. Because the last thing I want is every quarter 500 used hot tubs showing up in my warehouse saying, from people saying, hey, I want my money back. Because that sounds like the most annoying thing to deal with, because no one wants to buy a used hot tub. But for like my family's manufacturing business, where they have all the tools in house, they might say, hey, no, we're actually take the returns because we know what parts are good, what parts are bad. We already have a team member who goes through, takes all the returns, takes them apart, and repurposes all the parts. We have no problem with the returns. This is still good parts to us. Yeah, it's give us the returns, not the 3%. And so it kind of, every single little thing comes down to what makes sense most for your company. Do you want to use Amazon's freight bill, or do you want to use your own freight bill? Do you want Amazon to take a percentage of your money and spend it on advertising the way they see fit, on like an advertising co-op? Or would you like to pay less of that fee but then give them better pricing? And like all these things can be negotiated. And this again comes down to, not to just plug ourselves again, but it's something that a lot of brands just don't know what they don't know. And it's good to have someone in their corner who has kind of an idea of what the standard fees are, so they don't get go in there completely blinded to negotiations.
Let's talk about some like a practical use case. Brand or customer comes to you and is looking for advice. They've never sold on Amazon before. So how do you actually help a brand new customer in an engagement for Goat Consulting?
So here would be some kind of questions I'd ask right off the bat. Is, do you sell your products currently on your own website or in brick and mortar stores? From that information, I would figure out also, do you have some sort of social media following? Do you have any email list? Do you have any sort of traction on any of those? From there, we'd kind of work with your marketing team to come up with a cohesive plan of, okay, yes, we do sell in brick and mortar stores, but a lot of the brick and mortar stores are selling their products out the back door on Amazon and they're not supposed to. So we're going to draft a letter to all of our wholesalers and brick and mortar stores saying, hey, if you're providing great value to our customers and you're keeping our stuff on the shelves and explaining to what our product is to the customers, we love you and keep doing what you're doing. If you're selling your products on the back door, out the back door on Amazon, we're going to have to cut you off and we can no longer supply you with our products. We are going to be selling the products moving forward on Amazon. We're going to be selling them through the Seller Central platform where we control the price and control the branding. That way we're going to keep the price high so that the brick and mortar stores can still make their margin while protecting the brand, and kind of explain that whole process and how we would explain it to their company internally, and I explain it to the different brick and mortar stores there. And then from there, we would start executing on how to organize their brand on Amazon, how to merchandise it properly, how to protect the brand properly by doing stuff like brand registry. And then eventually, once everything is beautiful and retail ready, then we can start running the advertising and start actually trying to increase sales on Amazon. But it's kind of a step-by-step process. And first and foremost is figuring out the business model and how Amazon is going to coexist within their current systems.
You have to go to Seller Central first, right? You don't have an option to go to Vendor Central directly.
And that's something where we have worked with enough vendors and know enough vendor managers where if they were a really legit brand and they had not got a vendor invite, we could probably get them one. If it was some company like Sharpie, or I'm just kind of looking at stuff where it's like name brands, you'd go, okay, I know you don't have a Vendor Central account, but I know someone who's a vendor manager in the office category. And I'm sure if I came to them saying, hey, Sharpies wants to sell direct to you, that they'd be jumping over the moon, because on the vendor manager side, their metrics is just about like increasing their SKU count and revenue in their specific category. So they'd be more than happy about it. Now, if I came to the vendor manager and said, hey, I have this generic marker brand that no one's heard of, but I'm sure that they would do great on Vendor Central, they're going to look at their backend analytics, see what the previous sales are, and go, yeah, we don't see really a path to profitability. We don't really want to buy your products directly from you. You should just stick with Seller Central and not kind of waste my time on this product. And so we've built up some goodwill within Amazon in specific categories. And so we try not to abuse it unless it's just kind of a no-brainer.
Right.
But yes, for most everyone, you start out Seller Central.
Okay. But if you had the choice, which program is actually more profitable or better margins long-term for the company?
And that's a tough question, because when your products are shipped and sold by Amazon, and they're on the Vendor Central side and Amazon's taking possession of the product, you tend to make your products rank higher. They tend to push your products in front of the competitors who are not on Vendor Central. And so you make less margin on Vendor Central, but you can see for some people I've heard of like doubling their sales, actual like unit sales, because they went from Seller Central to Vendor Central. And so it kind of depends on the category. If every single person in your category on that first page of your main keyword you're going after is Seller Central and you're the only Vendor Central one, you could see a very big increase in sales, because Amazon's going to push your listing to the front and make your customers buy yours as much as possible because it's in their best interest. But if you look on your page, like half the people are Vendor Central, half the people are not, when you look up a specific keyword, then it doesn't really matter as much. You might not see the increase that you normally would see, since Amazon's kind of pushing five different products forward at once.
As a brand, do you actually recommend that they do sell on Amazon?
Yeah, for sure. We talk to brands sometimes who are kind of interested, and they say, hey, I'm interested in Amazon, but maybe that's in our 3-year roadmap or something like that. Or we're considering doing something with it in 2020. And I see that as a big mistake. If you're selling a physical product and you don't have some sort of strategy for Amazon in the next 6 months to 6 years, why not? It's not going anywhere. You need to find some way to use that traffic to make your business better. What's the best way for you to kind of dip your toe in and try something or another? It's very similar to a company in like 1998 saying, we don't have a website and we're planning on getting a website in the next few years, but it's not really on kind of the tip of our tongue, where you go, okay, well, the internet's not going anywhere. I get that it doesn't really make sense for you to have a car insurance website in 1998 because people aren't shopping for car insurance online yet, but trust me, it's not going anywhere. You really want to have a strategy for this moving forward, because this is going to be the future.
What do you think some of the big changes as far as the seller programs that people might see coming from Amazon?
The seller program, it's slowly but surely getting a lot of stuff that only vendors had access to earlier. And from what I've heard internally, it seems like they're going to be shutting down vendor in the next few years because it's just not as profitable as they hoped. And so I think the Seller Central is going to be become more and more robust. And I almost hope to get to a point where they start charging more and more money for using the Seller Central platform, because that way we'll get better support. We'll have less kind of fly-by-night sellers who are selling junk out of their garage, and it'll be all professional sellers who get actual professional support and get professional help from Amazon.
You also mentioned something about cracking down on Chinese sellers or Chinese product.
I hate to use that word as a kind of a generalization, but it tends to be where the majority of the kind of malpractice is coming from. Read an article in the Wall Street Journal about an office in China that Amazon has where they're selling data out the back door to Chinese sellers on exactly what sales and what keywords are being used, straight from Amazon's data, to Chinese sellers selling counterfeit products, to them manipulating reviews, to all these different things that for us, when I'm speaking at these Amazon conferences over in China, that these things seem like obvious stuff that I would just stay away from and that wouldn't even touch with a 10-foot pole. They need to realize that eventually, if they want to build brands, they want to build sustainable businesses, they're going to have to be more like a brand like Anchor, who does a great job, or DJI, or one of these Chinese brands that does a really great job of innovating and coming out with new products and doing great customer service, opposed to some of these other companies where they just try to sell a widget for a penny cheaper than the next guy, and they don't really care about the quality. And if anything bad happens to their Amazon account, they just shut it down and open a new one, no problem. With my generation, more and more people only want to buy physical products that have a story behind them. And they want to buy less and less stuff that have just that are just like widgets, where they want to go, okay, I'm either going to spend money on experiences, or I want to spend money on this rug that I bought in this country that reminds me of this moment and blah, 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 opposed to, hey, I bought this rug because it was $19 on Amazon.
What do you think about the concept of online to offline? If a retail store, for example, actually starts selling their products on Amazon, do you think it would benefit their actual retail store as well?
Yes, I think for a couple reasons. If you have like five of one unit in your retail store and it just won't sell, there you basically have to go online. Mm-hmm. Because if you had it there, you can either sit there and keep reducing the price till someone will come in and go, yeah, I guess I'll buy that thing that's worth $100 for $10 because you made it 90% off. But for the most part, eventually you're going to have to go online and try to liquidate some of that stuff, because that size pair of whatever cowboy boots that's in size 18 that no one will buy in your cowboy boot store, someone online is going to go, wow, I can never find a pair of 18 size cowboy boots, but I found them online in 2 seconds. And you actually can make those connections between the customer and the business that you previously couldn't when you had a limited supply of customers on your street. And so I think always there's a way to supplement your stuff online and kind of get the best of both worlds.
So you could probably sell a limited selection of your products on Amazon, and just by people buying it, they get to know your brand better.
Exactly. That, or when you get up just your minimum order quantities, where if you were buying 100 boots a week for your brick and mortar store, but now you're ordering 300 boots a week because you're selling online and in brick and mortar, you might get a 10-20% price decrease on the boots you're buying, since you're buying them at higher scale. There's specific niches where you're selling a widget. It doesn't really matter. You can just sell it online. No one really cares. Now, say you're selling like a fly fishing pole, and someone wants to come in there and they're saying, hey, I'm going to be fishing so-and-so creek this weekend. And the guy at the fly fishing store looks up and goes, okay, it should be 48 and sunny. So that means you're going to probably want to use this lure. And I used this lure last weekend on that same creek and caught this big fish. And they show them a picture on their iPhone. And like right there, they're actually giving very specific information about the product, how it works, giving anecdotal examples, building connection with the customer. That's the kind of stuff that like online is never going to be able to really beat. And so if you have a specific product that people are going to have a lot of questions about, that you give a lot of support for, give a lot of anecdotal data about, that's going to be where you can provide some real value, and a brick and mortar store is going to make all the sense in the world. But if you're just selling like you're a batteries plus store and all you do is sell a bunch of different types of batteries, there might not be as much need for you, because they can just take the battery out of their car, look up the model number and order it on Amazon and have it come in 2 days, and they don't really need to come into your store. So it may be, it kind of depends on product by product if a brick and mortar store really makes sense or not.
Great to talk to you again and get an update on what's going on with Goat Consulting, yourself, and in the Amazon world. And if people want to contact you, how do they do that?
Yeah, go to goatconsulting.com, GOAT consulting.com, and just fill out the contact us form and say, hey, you heard me on the retail and tech podcast, and I'll make sure to reach out to you and answer any questions you have.
Thank you so much, and happy holidays.
Yep, you too.